Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel. And this is about the renationalisation of the railways in the United Kingdom. So it's just started in a small way. On the 25th of May this year, it happened with the South Western Railway, which goes from London Waterloo all the way down to Cornwall. So through counties like Berkshire and Surrey and so forth. So that's the first big train operator to go back into public hands. Railways, there were set up privately after 1925. First World War, the government briefly took them over. They went back into private hands in the 1920s. Second World War, government took them over as a temporary measure. The Labour government came in 1945 and nationalised them, rationalised it was a British Rail, BR. And then in the early 90s, began to privatise. It was only finalised in the dying days of John Major's administration. 1997, he was a Conservative just before the Labour landslide victory of Tony Blair on the 1st of May 1997, things going to need to get better. That was when it was finalised. Now, Labour fought this tooth and nail, but it having happened, refused to return it. So then Virgin Trains were operating these trains, and they were still in private hands. They still got a subsidy from the taxpayer just because Richard Branson was Tony Blair's sort of bloke. And so and we're a very mixed blessing. I mean, the number of passengers has increased. Okay, the population increased, particularly in the densely populated areas where people needed to go by train and when their roads were just chocker and so on. So that was good. The rolling stock, the trains themselves got better and there was more efficiency and they're cleaner and so on. But the cost is eye-watering in real time, something like triple what it was in the 1980s. There are a few strikes, but then strikes tend to be one area, not the whole country, at least. So I would like to have a good service at a reasonable price. Well, the United Kingdom has got maybe a reasonable service at an extortionate price. Some of the most expensive services in the world are not the best. You know, German standard class is better than British first class and so forth. So why are they so pricey? And building new railways is just eye-wateringly expensive like this, a high speed two, going to go to Birmingham. Well, it's taken 20 years to go about 100 miles. It's never been going to get to Manchester. It's something like £80 billion. So this, Corbyn talked about doing it. Labour lost that election. Now Sir Keir Starmer, the moderates, come in and they've done it. The Passenger Railway Services Public Ownership Act was passed last year, received the royal assent in 2024. And that's the merest formality because we know the monarch always acts on ministerial advice, always signs these things to law. The last time a monarch vetoed anything was Queen Anne in 1708 with the Scottish Militia Bill. So train operating companies are going to come back into public ownership, state ownership, I could say. Will that be better? I mean, I know there was price gouging. Okay, companies make a profit, but sometimes they make a profit and produce a worse service. And people say, well, it's a natural monopoly. Competition only works where there are going to be two or more companies can compete to offer the best service or product. And a railway, any one company is going to operate the train between these two towns. So there is no competition. We could take the bus or you could drive, you just cannot travel, but okay. We get real, it's got to be rail against rail. So Great British Railways has been created, a state-owned entity. And that is going to superintend the whole railway network for passenger, I think not freight, certainly in England, some of those going into Scotland and Wales. So anyway, so that'll be it. I remember there was English, Welsh and Scottish. And I thought, well, could you call it WestCo, as in Wales, England, Scotland? But anyway, so otherwise, C2C is going to come back into public hands in 2025 because they had a contract for 5 years renewable. Greater Anglia is going to come back in October and so on. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. So the majority of people thought it was a good idea, but the public was against privatization. I mean, I was for it at the time. I have mixed feelings right now. But if you can prove to me they'll provide as good or a better service we have currently at a better price, then go for it. And they had to have a board of directors for every company. They got their salaries, these fat cats, and that was money that wasn't going into improving the railways. And obviously, there's a perverse incentive. How do you make a big profit? You charge as much as you can get away with and spend as little as you can get away with producing the on the service or product. And there's always a temptation to cut corners. But, you know, the rail track was taken back into public hands in 2000 after a major accident because, as I say, they'd be tempted to spend as little as possible on safety, and obviously accidents were going to happen. And I wish people in the United States would understand that about healthcare. So there have already been some journeys under and whilst it's in public hands. A railway replacement bus service went wrong due to engineering works, so that always happens. So the transport secretary is Heidi Alexander, and she says it's going to save £150 million in fees at least, but she hasn't said there'll necessarily be fare reductions. So what was the point of it? What are we going to spend the extra money on? Some people think it's worse. I've got so many ideas about railways, about new lines, especially East London. There's not enough north-south connectivity, or lines which could be quite easily hooked up, or putting a railway station all the way to Luton Airport, not stopping a mile down the hill. So yeah, more east-west links, because quite often to go into London and out to make things better. You know, in London, sorry, in Oxford, having Littlemoor and County Road connected to the city centre, and so forth. So Network Rail has just signed a 14-year long agreement with the EDF Renewables, and the stations are going to be using solar energy. There's a lot of overmanning. You know, you sometimes you go to the gates like Oxford, and there'll be like six people on them. You need one at most, so just leave it open. Goodness. So it's very, very wasteful employing people who don't need to be employed. Have all automated trains. The Docklands Light Rail has had self-driving trains for 30 years. And much cheaper, much more efficient, no rail driver strikes. These people, these train drivers are paid 60 grand for passing stop and go. They don't even steer. You can do an 18 with like no qualifications. Why do they need to be paid so much? Because they got us by the short and curlies. If they wanted, they can paralyze the country. So obviously London needs another major railway station to the south. Not just Clapham Junction, another one further west and so on. Extra platforms. They could have one, you know, the Northern Line could go could go to Clapham Junction, but then that put even more pressure on that station. Remember, because when the IRA set off a bomb around Clapham Junction, they closed down the country for ages. And obviously, there could be life imprisonment without possibility of parole for membership of any terrorist organization. The United Kingdom was way too soft on these absolute monsters. So, what else? So that if something goes wrong at a major station, you can reroute and stuff. I think you've got to have a little bit of spare capacity in the system. The train from London Waterloo to Reading, that takes an hour and a half. From Paddington to Reading takes only 20 minutes. So they need another southern line, a faster one, to skip the minor stations, because between London Waterloo and Reading, there are about 15 stations. You need one someone that stops about three places or something like that. Oxford's been more frequent, you know, trains to London like 3 an hour. So I would have one non-stop, because you can go Cambridge to King's Cross non-stop. I'd have one an hour from Oxford to London non-stop, one that stops at Reading only or something, and then obviously slow trains stop in a dozen places. So a lot more that can be done to improve. I'm very glad the Oxford Cambridge line is coming back. There was the Beeching Act in the early acts in the early 60s. Dr. Beeching did that report for the government reshaping Britain's railways, closed down a lot of the railway lines. Much of that was sensible, as people were affording cars. The working class could afford cars by then, and some stations and lines were hugely loss making to consolidate the worthwhile lines. But since then, the population of the United Kingdom has risen 40%, and the Southeast East England has risen more like 60%. There's a case for reopening. Although there's so many cars on the road, you've got to reopen railway lines, and plus we can make them faster. We don't have so many offices or whatever, or warehouses or factories. We can turn those into stations, these former sites. So I'm giving this a guarded welcome. We'll see how it goes. So thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, then on PayPal, jordancan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.